You're listening to Asia First Weekend. I'm Susan Ng. Good morning. And we cross over now to our U.S. Bureau Chief, Simon Marks, in Washington, D.C. Simon, hello.
Susan, lovely to be with you.
Lovely to talk to you again. Simon, let's start off today with the G7 summit. Now, the G7 group's richest democracies, they've sought to counter China's growing influence by offering developing nations an infrastructure plan that would rival President Xi Jinping's multi-trillion dollar Belt and Road Initiative. Simon, share with us more about this.
Yeah, this is very interesting. I mean, we knew that President Biden wanted to move forward with this. We didn't know in concrete terms it was going to come out of the G7 summit. They are calling it the Build Back Better World Partnership, or B3W for short. I'm bound to say, when I first heard B3W, I thought immediately that it sounded like a British postcode. It is something of a mouthful, but the details of this are clearly designed to send a message to Beijing that the United States and G7 leaders want to move forward with some kind of a plan that they say will rival Belt and Road and allow them to play, let's be honest, a game of catch-up, because the Chinese are obviously substantially down the path of building Belt and Road and creating these new partnerships, as they've done in various parts of the world, very prevalent in Africa, but also in Latin America and elsewhere. And this is described as a bold new infrastructure initiative that the G7 leaders are calling values-driven, high-standard, and transparent. They say that it's going to help narrow the $40 trillion-plus infrastructure need in the developing world, which they say has been exacerbated by COVID-19. They argue, as they have done with the vaccine diplomacy that President Biden, Boris Johnson, and the other G7 leaders are all now about to engage in, that this effort to build infrastructure in low and middle income countries will be coming without any strings attached. Will absolutely be focused on delivering high-standard, climate-friendly, strategic partnerships in terms of infrastructure. They don't want this to be seen in any way as simply benefiting those countries that are behind B3W. The inference behind all of this, of course, is that China is not, they infer, adopting a similar path, and through Belt and Road, they are by inference saying China is seeking to expand its sphere of influence and is looking for payback from those countries in which it's investing. A lot of this is going to be done through private capital that will be encouraged to engage in development finance. I think there are going to be huge questions long after the G7 summit is over as to just how much money these governments are willing to commit to this kind of outreach. But it definitely shows, as we've seen again and again over the last few weeks, that President Biden is saying to leaders of the G7 and will say to leaders of the European Union and NATO when he travels on to Brussels next, that liberal democracies now need to come together and confront autocracies like China and Russia in a bid to, as Joe Biden puts it, win the battle for the 21st century. There was also one other bit of late news coming out of Cornwall, and it relates to a trilateral meeting that was held by President Biden, British Prime Minister Boris Johnson, and Prime Minister Scott Morrison of Australia. And according to the White House readout of that meeting, the three leaders agreed that the strategic context in the Indo-Pacific was changing and that there is a strong rationale for deepening strategic cooperation between those three governments, Australia, Britain, and the US. And that again seems to be a message that is going to be sent to China from this G7 summit. As to how tough the message to China is going to be, we are waiting to see what the final communique says coming out of this G7 meeting. And a litmus test is going to be whether it makes any reference to forced labor in Xinjiang and other parts of China. That's something that the Americans want to see explicitly criticized in the text of the communique. It's unclear as the final day of the G7 summit begins whether it will be in there or not.
Simon, moving back to news out of the US, there's been another mass shooting, this time in Austin, Texas. More pressure, perhaps, on President Biden regarding gun laws?
Yeah, definitely. And more pressure from President Biden on the United States Congress as a result of this. One suspect involved in that shooting on Friday night in the center of Austin has now been arrested. The hunt is on for a second who was allegedly involved in this shooting that left 14 people injured. Police say they don't believe that any of those people was deliberately targeted. This appears to have been some kind of a dispute between the two gunmen that became violent between themselves and then started to catch people who were out enjoying a night on the town in Austin, one of America's most rapidly growing cities in the Lone Star State of Texas. They were all caught in the middle. It is a very vibrant university town. It has Austin an extensive array of live music venues and clubs and restaurants right in the center of the city. And it was in that area where this shooting occurred. And on a Friday night, with Texas now having relaxed most of its COVID-19 restrictions, you know, life, normal life in Austin is rebounding. So it will have been an extremely busy night there. This shooting comes on the fifth anniversary of the Pulse nightclub shooting in Orlando that left 49 people killed and 53 others wounded. President Biden had put out a statement earlier in the day on the fifth anniversary of that shooting, once again reiterating his insistence that Congress needs to move forward and start passing sensible gun control legislation in the United States. But President Biden will be very aware that Congress is not going to do that and that it doesn't seem to matter how many mass shootings occur. And there have been a whole raft of them in recent months. There is no head of steam building on Capitol Hill for members of the House of Representatives or the Senate to move forward with things like a ban on assault weapons. They just don't have the political determination to do that. And as a result, I fear we'll see more of this in the future and see more of it soon.
Another summit coming up between President Joe Biden and Russian President Vladimir Putin this time. Now, they're not expected to hold a joint press conference following their summit next week. Tell us, Simon, what's on the agenda, though?
Well, the fact that they're not going to hold a joint press conference tells you something about the state of the likely conversation that's going to take place, because a week ago, the White House said they simply didn't know what the arrangements were going to be. It would be normal for the two leaders to hold a joint press availability for reporters. The White House said they were open to it. So one must, I think, conclude that the Russians decided it wasn't going to be a good idea. President Biden, when he flew into Britain the other night, told military personnel at an Air Force base that he was going to tell President Putin what I think he needs to know. And he indicated that he's not going to hold back in terms of insisting that the United States will not hesitate to respond if the Russians continue engaging in the kind of cyber espionage and cyber attacks that they have been engaging in. Remember that U.S. government computers had Russian state-sponsored actors snooping on them for fully 9 months last year before they were detected. There are still damage assessments underway as to how much information the Russians gleaned from that. More broadly, you can expect cases like Alexei Navalny, the jailed opposition activist, to be raised by President Biden, who insists that Alexei Navalny should be immediately freed and the restrictions on the activities of his opposition grouping doping should be alleviated. President Biden has previously embraced the characterization of Vladimir Putin that John McCain, the late senator, advanced as being a killer. And indeed, in an interview with NBC that Vladimir Putin gave on Friday, he's asked directly by the reporter asking the questions, "Are you a killer?" Which, let's be honest, I mean, there is no more basic yes or no question that you could possibly ask someone, and it doesn't elicit a yes or no response. He argues, the Russian leader, that the question is rooted in American culture and Hollywood and the Wild West, but he never actually gets round to denying that he is a killer. He does say that the relationship between the US and Russia is at its lowest ebb. And he expresses admiration for former President Donald Trump, says that he was an extraordinarily talented man who came to politics, obviously, out of nowhere, had no political background. And he expresses the view that Joe Biden is, of course, a veteran of Washington, D.C. and its corridors of power. And he almost seems to regret the fact that he's having to deal with an establishment politician now, as opposed to the maverick Donald Trump, who many people argue was throughout his presidency very sympathetic towards Vladimir Putin and hesitant to confront him. Indeed, Donald Trump himself said in a statement on Thursday that he trusts the Russian government more than he trusts the American government. And he asked Joe Biden to convey his warmest wishes to Vladimir Putin. I don't think that President Biden is going to spend much time doing that.
And on a lighter note, Simon, you know, if I was offered a chance to go to space, I'm not sure if I would take up that opportunity. I'm not sure if you would, but if you could, how much would you pay to go to space with Jeff Bezos?
Well, I'd like to go, Susan, but I'm not sure that I would spend $28 million on it, which is, we have learnt, what someone has decided to do. Jeff Bezos, the Amazon founder, is going to be flying into space next month on a brief flight on board one of his own rocket ships. And he's decided that he's taking his brother with him, but he's also said that he would take another passenger. And so there was an auction set up online for someone to win the chance to go into space with Jeff Bezos, the money all going to a charitable foundation that Mr. Bezos oversees that promotes education in the fields of science, technology, engineering and maths. And we have learnt within the last few hours that the winner of the auction has pledged $28 million for that seat on the rocket. I mean, last time I looked, about a week ago, the highest bid was $2.8 million, so tenfold higher than that. And we don't yet know who the winner is. They're not going to reveal the identity of the winner for two more weeks, they say. No idea who the mystery passenger is going to be, but they will be making history as they hurtle into space alongside Jeff Bezos. Richard Branson is also planning something very similar. There were some reports here this week that he's trying to get into space before Jeff Bezos. I mean, literally, Susan, a space race, but it looks like they're all going to get into space before us.
But I do hope, Simon, that someday you will be able to have that opportunity.
It would be great, wouldn't it? We could go live for CNA from space.
Oh, how great.
That would be fantastic.
Oh, that would
Absolutely.
Be fantastic. I hope I get on that ride with you. Simon, thank you as always. Good to speak with you.
Thanks, Susan. I'll talk to you soon.
And that was Simon Marks, our U.S. Bureau Chief, talking to us from Washington, D.C.